Welcome to the Jig Is Up podcast with your hosts, Darcy and Jason. The Jig Is Up is recorded on the traditional lands of the Blackfoot Confederacy, as well as the lands of Treaty Six Nations. We aim to bring you new perspectives and open up conversations about Métis politics, culture, and current events, as well as stories that affect Indigenous from all over. If you like the show, or you don't, or if you want to send us suggestions for guests or topics to discuss on the show, feel free to email us at metispodcast@gmail.com. And be sure to follow us on all of the social media at Métis Podcast. All right, well, welcome to the Jig Is Up. And I'm excited today because joining me is Heather Morgeau. Welcome, Heather.
Yeah, thanks, Darcy.
So I wanted you to come on today just because we've been involved in the White Bison organization here a little bit in the last year. Mm-hmm. And so I kind of just thought it'd be kind of cool to get a little bit of a history as to, because you were really the catalyst for all of this happening, for getting a bunch of people trained as facilitators and starting up the programs here in Calgary. So I just kind of wanted to have you on to just talk a little bit about that. Like, how did it start for you, and why is White Bison important for you and that kind of thing?
Yeah, awesome. So, I'm so happy to talk about it. I'm super passionate about it. Well, I'm going to go back a little bit further and explain a bit about what White Bison is first.
Sure.
So about 30 years ago, a man by the name of Don Coyas from the Mohican Nation, he was an AA member and saw that there were some gaps in the system where, you know, when an Indigenous person is walking into an AA room, they don't stick around.
Right.
Right. And why is that? And what can we do to make 12-step recovery more approachable for Indigenous people? So he created the Medicine Wheel and the 12 Steps and the White Bison Society, and then from there created a whole series of amazing programs for cultural healing. So there's the Mending Broken Hearts program, there's the Warrior Down, Mothers of Tradition, Fathers of Tradition, there's a whole gamut.
Yeah, there's Sons and Daughters of Tradition,
like a whole, I think there's 10 different programs, and they apply to like different demographics, men, women, and youth, right?
Yeah.
So I had a friend of ours, Bob Federchuk, approached me, and he had recently heard about training that was happening in Central Alberta.
Yeah.
There, the Central Alberta Fetal Alcohol Spectrum Disorder Association was able to get the training contract for Central Alberta and for Alberta.
Nice.
So they were bringing in the trainers who had been down to Colorado where White Bison was originally created, bringing the program up to Alberta, training people in Alberta, and they were traveling to back to their communities and bringing this program to their community.
Yep.
And Bob told me about this, and I had never actually even heard of it, right? Had heard of different cultural recovery programs, but nothing really quite as impressive.
Yeah, yeah.
So I researched it and instantly fell in love. And so I was able to talk with the Right Relations team at Wild Rose United Church, and they had some money left over from the Arts Festival.
Okay.
So I was able to get them to donate that money to Bob to make sure that he was able to get the training, because it's not, it's quite costly.
Yeah.
Right? Because you are gaining facilitator certification, right? From a program that is expecting something from you, right? They don't give people training and say, hey, good luck. You know, they actually do support people after they've been trained and make sure that they can establish groups in their area.
Nice.
Bob came back and we were able to start a pilot project here in Calgary. Our first try was actually in a church, which was not the best idea.
But it was space available, right?
It was space available, and we're grateful for it, but it was really one of those things where you've got like a whole culture of people who have been traumatized by religious institutions trying to come into a religious institution to cure intergenerational trauma. It doesn't really work.
Yeah, for sure.
Like, it was not a great concept, but it at least let us know that yes, there was interest, yes, there was people who were excited about the idea and wanted to do this. So from there, we were able to secure training funding from the government of Alberta for six certified Wobriety facilitators. So in the medicine wheel and 12 steps.
Yeah.
And then the Mending Broken Hearts program. And four of them are Indigenous. One of them is Elder Marilyn Chinguse.
Mm-hmm.
And from there, we were able to get funding from the Calgary Foundation to launch our first groups at the local Métis 87.
Right on.
They donated space to us.
Yeah.
And
they've been really good, actually.
They've been amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so we've got groups happening there now.
Yeah.
On Mondays is the men's group. On Tuesdays is the women's group.
Yeah.
And then...
you just started Mending Broken Hearts as well.
Yeah. Michelle is your lovely wife is the reason that... Aboriginal Friendship Center of Calgary. And yeah. They have a location downtown called the Hub, the Indigenous mm-hmm. Hub. And so it was a great location. It's right on the train line. You know, it's already a community hotspot.
For sure, yeah.
Right, for Indigenous people. So they were able to donate space to us, and we started just this past Monday and had probably 25 people come in.
That's amazing. And I think the thing that I've noticed about these programs is just how easily they fit into any Indigenous, I guess, culture. Because they're not specific, like, it all starts off, like, it's a very similar process through them. But you're not doing somebody else's ceremony.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's really kind of important for Indigenous. I mean, these can be put in any community and they kind of fit. So that's what I've always enjoyed that about them.
Yeah, absolutely. It's something that can be tailored to your culture.
Yeah.
Right? It's not pan-Indigenous.
Yeah.
Right? But it is very easy to inject your culture into it and enrich it that way.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I love that too.
So, like, how much, I guess, you know, you talked about getting grants and stuff, but, like, it's actually quite difficult in today's environment to get really any funding.
Yeah.
unless you kind of already have an inroad in those, you know, areas. So has that been one of the biggest challenges to this whole thing, is just getting funding to train people to bring the programs in?
Definitely, yes.
Yeah.
Getting grant funding is difficult. Freedom's Path Recovery Society is a young charity. We're only a couple years old.
Yeah.
So nobody really knows what we're doing in the community. And so when we're presenting, you know, this is the project we'd like funding for, they're like, well, who are you? You know, they have no idea who we are. But we've been, you know, we've had two successes out of the many applications we've sent out.
Yeah.
And that's great. Mm. Right. Even one or two successes makes a huge difference.
Yeah.
We also had a couple individuals in the community who heard about this project and approached David and wanted to be funding backers.
Okay.
So because Freedom's Path Recovery Society is a charity, we accept donations, right?
Yeah.
And
you give tax receipts, all
exactly.
that kind of charity stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. And so there's a few people in the community who really see the work we're doing as important and essential to the community.
Wow.
And so they are, like, really, I don't want to call them angel donors, but that's really what they are.
They donate a good chunk.
Yeah. They make significant contributions to make sure we can keep doing this work.
That's amazing.
It really is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because it's, even getting to the point where you're a charity is a tough road. Like, a lot of people don't understand that road, but I mean, it's not like you just fill a paper and send it in and a week later you're a charity. It's like, I heard right now it's like a 3 to 4 year process.
Yeah, it was.
So, like, you gotta have your financials in line. You gotta have this, you gotta have that. And if one thing falls apart or they don't like it, you gotta start over right from scratch and do the whole process again.
Yeah, exactly.
So it's not like they work with you on it. It's just have everything in place or not.
Yeah, exactly.
So,
and with David, I mean, he's the executive director.
Yeah.
He's been doing social work for 20 years.
Yeah.
The Pathway to Freedom program, he's been doing it for 12 years.
Yeah.
So when he was approached by people who are like, you know what, this needs to be a charity. This needs to be a service that's available in Calgary. It was a perfect fit.
Yeah.
You know, because the groundwork had already been laid.
Yeah.
You know, this has been decades in the making, right? And the Wilbriety component to it is new, but it fits very well because it's all cost, like the key point of Freedom's Path Recovery Society services is to ensure that these are available free of cost.
Yes. And that's one of the key things of White Bison is that you don't charge people to get healthy or heal or get, you know, stay in recovery or anything like that,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, exactly. So. And that doesn't mean that it's free for us to provide those services, right?
Like
Ordering the materials, making sure that we've got space, making sure that the elders are properly given honorariums for their time.
Yeah.
That those are all expenses.
Absolutely. Right? Well, and just even things like tea, coffee, like all these things, it just kind of, it seems like little things, but they tend to add up quite quickly.
Yeah, but it's so important to be able to make these free and open to the community, right?
So have you had much response from people who've maybe even taken the program elsewhere or just are in, and I know we don't want to get into people in the program, but what's the response been kind of from, I guess, participants or former participants or just community in general that you've found?
Yeah. So we had, I think, 5 people complete the pilot launch.
Oh, right. Yeah,
When we had that. And they were elated with it. And I still keep in touch with them. And they're all doing very well. I'm not going to comment about, like, their sobriety or their path
or
anything like that. Yeah. But I will say their feedback was fantastic.
Yeah. Take a drink. It's easy. It's all good. I know. I suddenly have a cough now. I don't know why.
That's the dry air.
I know.
But their feedback was fantastic. They talked about how the program helped them connect to culture that they had been disconnected from. So some of them were scoop survivors. So people who were adopted out from their family of origin. They're indigenous, but they never actually had the opportunity to learn any of these things and didn't know where to go. So they saw this program on Facebook, and this was sort of like the first stepping stone to connecting them to people in the community who hold ceremonies and stuff like that. So that was really special for me to be able to be a part of that, because it is intimidating to enter into a community like the Indigenous community when you know that there's protocol, you know that you don't want to appropriate.
That's
you know that there's already been painful history that nobody wants to see. Well, hopefully nobody wants to see it repeated. And so it was really exciting to see them like take those first steps here and then go out into the community and start building those relationships.
Wow.
That was probably like the highlight for me. There's also been, you know, family of people who are in, like, so people who are struggling with addictions and their family members are coming into the program.
Nice.
Because what often happens is people who have addictions, their loved ones and the people who are around them, they start experiencing addictive behaviors, right? And dysfunctional behaviors, trying to accommodate this person with the addiction.
Nice.
So we've had family members who start by saying, oh, this would be really good for my son, daughter, husband, wife, whoever. And then we say, well, what about you? You know, do you need support? Because you're trying to live with this person who's struggling with addiction and you need support too.
Yeah.
So then they come, and then there's been this amazing development of them building their own support network.
You know? Well, that's one of the things that I know that personally for me, I can say I'm not in recovery from, you know, alcohol or drugs. But just going through the healing steps of it, even the 12-step, the way they have it in the White Bison program, like it really is healing, even if you don't think you need it. Because I have to admit, when we first did the facilitator training, I was like, oh, this would be really cool. But I didn't really expect me to get a lot out of it. Like, I was like, oh, this would be really cool. Go learn, you know, learn to facilitate.
Yeah.
But what I really walked away with going was, wow, I got a lot of healing to do, and there's a lot of stuff that I can work on to be a better human being.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not a negative, but it's a positive. Like, you walk out going, wow, like, I know those 12 steps were built for alcohol, but they apply to so many things.
Absolutely.
Because it's really just taking stock of your life and trying to figure out what kind of life you want.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I think it's so silly that we just, well, that's for alcoholics, mm-hmm. but it's really for anybody.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. And really for anybody that feels a disconnection from community.
Yeah.
Like any community.
Yeah.
Right? Like a lot of people will come to 12-step meetings simply because it helps them connect to people in a way that they can't get anywhere else.
For sure.
You know, and so that's a beautiful thing.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah, and the one thing, I guess the one of the other things you mentioned was the connection to culture. Because mm-hmm. I've noticed, like, it's tough because I think, you know, if you're visibly Indigenous, people just expect you to be, you know, fully Indigenous.
Yeah.
You know, you've done the powwow trail for your whole life, that whole thing. But even beyond that, like, even if you've done that, but you've moved to a new community and for a job, for whatever, mm-hmm. well, you're now kind of the outsider. And I really feel like this, I've seen some people really kind of start to see that connection mm-hmm. to culture, to local elders, right? It's, because it is hard and it's very intimidating to try to figure out, like, you can't just walk up to an elder and be like, hey, let's hang out or yeah. something, you know? So I think it's really cool to kind of see that. And then, what I really like is the fact that we're doing it in a Métis space, mm-hmm. which for me was a bonus because it's, you know, you're in there and there's books about Métis history and there's, you know, but just being in the local, I think it's important. It kind of makes it feel really Indigenous, like yeah. really connected.
Yeah, and being able to hold smudge ceremonies and do drumming and sing totally. Our songs as loud as we love to sing them, right? Like that's all important.
Absolutely.
For the healing process. So yeah, I'm so grateful that you were able to make that connection for
well, us. And you know, I mean, kudos to the local here in Calgary mm-hmm. for donating their space.
Yeah.
Because it has been a huge bonus mm-hmm. or benefit to us.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously, we'd love to be able to rent it from them, but that's again comes down to funding mm-hmm. and
we'll get there.
You know, but that's just it. You build the programs. It's a marathon, right?
Yeah.
And I think one of the goals is to make sure that these programs kind of continue on. So you'd mentioned Mondays and Tuesdays here in Calgary, but not to just end and then 6 months later have another program. It's to kind of continue them on.
Yeah.
So once the first program's finished, great. Next week we're starting on the second run of it again.
Yeah, that's the hope. And the goal is to make sure that we've got a consistent space where people know they can come
yeah.
and immerse in these teachings and connect to them in a really good way yeah. and connect to community in a really good way.
Absolutely.
Right. So that's my end goal is to make sure that this is like a legacy project, like something that we have going on for years and years and years.
Yeah. Well, it's almost like you look at the AA rooms and it's like, I'm sure there's rooms in Calgary. I've never been to them, but I'm sure there's rooms that were started by some people, mm-hmm. but they're being run by other people now.
Yeah.
And it's kind of the same principle where it's like, we just want to make sure that somebody has a place to go every week mm-hmm. if they need to, you know? Yeah. And I think that's really vital.
Yeah, exactly. And I do see a difference in that between mending broken hearts and the Medicine Wheel and 12 Steps.
Mm-hmm.
Medicine Wheel and 12 Steps definitely want to see it continue in specific locations for yep. a long, long time. Mending broken hearts, however, I would like to see it move around all throughout Calgary.
Okay.
And of course, all the facilitators have different approaches to it. So I'm not saying that this is the end all be all. But
yeah, yeah.
What I see with Mending Broken Hearts is it is a program that is designed to heal intergenerational trauma,
mm-hmm.
Trauma and grief, right? And addresses grief of unresolved relationships. So this can be relationships of people who have crossed over, passed away, or you've just had to move them out of your life because they're toxic, or you've just lost contact. Like,
yeah.
it can run the gamut.
Yep.
Right. But what we're looking at in the Mending Broken Hearts program is all Indigenous people have the shared history of colonialism
mm-hmm.
as a trauma that has not been addressed.
No. And continues today.
Right. And so when we come together with the intention of, you know, working towards healing.
Yep.
And we do that in a way that is Indigenous led, is a program created by Indigenous people. I feel like that's incredibly empowering.
Absolutely.
And so I really want to see that you know, we're doing it right now at the Aboriginal Friendship Center, but I want to see it go over here next into another program again.
Yeah.
Somewhere else. And then maybe
just to make it more accessible to everybody, yeah, kind of thing.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And just make sure that it's in spaces that like different people feel comfortable, right?
For sure.
And are accessible through transit or whatever.
Yeah.
And that's just because, you know, each time it's going to be a different experience. Each time the surroundings are going to affect people differently. But we've gotten to this point where I don't think there's a whole lot of Indigenous people who are sitting around saying, man, I really want another white person to give me another program,
yeah,
to fix myself that they've, absolutely, come up with, right? We're done with that. We're, yeah, tired. We are able to lead our own healing. Don Coyes did an amazing job of laying out this program and creating these videos. He's an amazing teacher, right?
Yeah, so, I've never heard a bad word about him. So,
like watching both of these programs, all, yeah, of the programs, I believe, involve watching video teachings of him,
yeah,
that he has recorded.
Yeah.
He's hilarious.
Yeah.
Right? Like he's so funny. And you know a really good knowledge keeper by the fact that they can give you like traditional teachings and make you laugh.
Absolutely.
And make you think.
Yeah.
And make you emotional.
And related to things that are happening today and technology in the world today.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's just, it's brilliant watching him. Yeah. And every time I've watched it, I learn something new. It sinks in a little deeper. It,
for sure.
It resonates on a different level. And yeah, it's amazing.
Well, that's what I've noticed is even, you know, we did the facilitator training. You watched those videos. But now we're doing the program and watching the videos again. And it's like, I know I'm getting more out of the videos the second time around, even though I got a lot out the first time. But it's, mm-hmm, now, I think, you know, obviously I'm in a different place now. Mm-hmm. So now I'm getting different information out of it. That's because every night that I watch those videos, it's kind of like an aha moment goes off. And I'm like, wow, okay.
Yeah.
Well, that's something to think about for the next week and until the next video. And so I haven't been facilitating the Mending Broken Hearts, but the difference between the two, one is specifically for 12 steps.
Mm-hmm.
It, so that one, they took the 12 steps, translated it over into an Indigenous lens.
Yeah.
And so with that, everything's focused basically on Indigenous teachings.
Mm-hmm.
So the, you know, the medicine wheel, the four directions, all that kind of stuff, and it relates it that way.
Mm-hmm.
So how do you think they work together? Do you think people should take one over the other? Or I guess if somebody was, mm-hmm, just... I guess it's tough because one's for recovery and addictions, but one's not. One's, yeah, just for trauma. So
yeah, I would probably say either of them are good.
Yeah.
Right. We'll start by saying that.
Yeah.
But if you could only take one, take the Mending Broken Hearts.
Yeah.
Right. Because the 12-step program can be daunting for some people. It's 18 weeks instead of 8 weeks.
Yeah, that's true.
Right. And for some people, it's a slog to, yeah, go for that long. Whereas the 8-week program is more introspective, right? Mm-hmm. Like you're looking at your own family history and your own history as compared, yeah, to just addiction.
True.
Right?
Yeah, yeah.
So it's a little broader, right? And I feel like it kind of, it's kind of that key into the door of healing,
mm-hmm,
right? So if somebody said, well, which one should I take first? And if I can only take one, I'd probably say Mending Broken Hearts.
Yeah.
And then see what comes.
Yeah, for sure. Well, the thing is the two of them use similar tools,
mm-hmm,
throughout the healing. One of them being like mind mapping and stuff like that. And actually, you know, one of the things I noticed that it's funny. You go through something like this and you think you know, or the arrogance or ego of a person, but you think you know quite a bit. But then you go through it and you realize things that are so simple, mm-hmm, that you're like, why didn't I not doing that? And one of the things for me that I noticed when I did the facilitator training was I don't really plan, mm-hmm, ahead. Like, so the idea of like, well, what do you want your life to be? I'm like, I don't know. I just go to work. But I think that's where most people are, is we get stuck in that rut of just, I go to work, I come home, I eat supper, you know, I do whatever.
Mm-hmm.
On the weekends, I do this and this and this. And then I start it all over back on Monday.
Yeah.
And you never put that thought in, okay, well, what kind of human being do I want to be at the end of the year? What kind of relationships do I want to have with my friends,
mm-hmm,
my family, my, you know, my spouse or partner, or my kids? You know, like, I don't know if a lot of people sit down and actually think about those kinds of things.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, for me, been one of the biggest benefits, I guess, to doing it, was just learning that.
Yeah.
So it's been amazing.
Yeah, and learning that it's not static.
Yeah.
Right? Like, a lot of people who have been pigeonholed, right?
Yep.
It's like, oh, you're an alcoholic, so you're only ever going to be this.
Yeah.
Or you're Indigenous, so you're only ever going to be that.
Yeah.
Right? That's, we can take that on and not even realize we've taken it on.
For sure.
Right? And then you stop, when you get into the program and you get to do that healing like you're talking about, and look at, well, who do I want to be? What does it look like to be a spiritual Indigenous person?
Yeah.
Who do I build relationships with? And what do those relationships look like?
Well, and how do you interact with your community? How do you walk through your community? Like,
mm-hmm.
how do you want to be in your community? And I think that's a huge, huge amount of healing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I agree with you. Like, it's definitely helped me shape how I imagine myself down the road.
Yeah.
Right, and was able to re-examine, like, how do I want to express my art
True.
As an Indigenous person? How do I want to communicate my creative side, right? And that kind of shifted after taking the World Variety programs.
Oh, that's amazing.
Yeah.
Well, I know for me it's been really eye-opening because, like I said, I went into it thinking, you know, I'm good. What do I, you know? But I think the reality is there's, in all of us, especially with Indigenous people, there's so much trauma for generations,
mm-hmm.
that even if you think you're doing good, there's still stuff you need to work on.
Mm-hmm.
And it isn't that you're a horrible person now. It's just that, why not be better?
Yeah.
You know, and I'm in an industry where everything that we do is supposed to be, you know, constant improvements.
Mm-hmm.
And yet in my personal life, never put thought to it.
Yeah.
So, and I think it's important for people to take that time to be introspective, and especially with programs like these where it's Indigenous focused, Indigenous led,
yeah.
Indigenous based.
Yeah.
I mean, that is so critical to the whole thing.
Absolutely. Yeah. And honestly, if somebody goes through the program and says, no, I'm happy with where I'm at, that's good too.
You know, well, this like, is it, right?
Like if you go through the program and you come out of it feeling like you don't have anything you have to improve on, okay.
Great. Yeah, that's awesome.
You know.
Absolutely. And that's the thing too, is like you get whatever you're going to get out of it whatever you need.
Mm-hmm.
And so everybody's experience through it is going to be different.
Totally.
Just based, I mean, your life experience is different, right? So.
Yeah, yeah.
So what, I guess moving forward, like you mentioned being able to have Well Variety move around.
Mm-hmm.
I guess, what do you hope to see in the next 12, 24 months for Freedom's Path, which mm-hmm. we should mention, I should mention and clarify, Freedom's Path Recovery Society is how we've been able to do all this facilitator training and things like that. And so hugely appreciative to them.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And, but so what do you think the next 12 to 24 months might be?
Yeah. So, recently we went to a circle discussion about opioids here in Calgary and the opioid crisis. And one of the things that, Michelle was bringing to the other agencies is the fact that we can come to your agency with our trained facilitators and provide this program to clients at other agencies.
Oh, good.
Right?
Okay.
So this is not just Freedom's Path Recovery Societies.
Yeah.
This is not just White Bisons. This is something that we can, you know, bring to another treatment center or another shelter or another community outreach program and provide it for them there. Yeah. Right. And so that makes it really versatile. So that means that, you know, you're hearing about this and you think it's great and you're like, oh, we really need this at our agency. I better start looking for funding to train facilitators. You don't have to do that. You can come to us. We can facilitate it through your program.
Yeah, because the facilitator's, I guess, certification is for the individual.
Exactly.
And they take that with them wherever they go.
Yeah. Yeah.
So.
And so we're trying to be sort of like a hub where if people want to have this program at their agency, we can be a contact and we can figure out who can be the best facilitator for that.
That's awesome.
So that's a big thing that I really want to build on is,
yeah.
you know, getting this out to the community, different agencies, different groups, different communities, whoever would benefit, and letting them know, like, it's available and we can make it happen.
Right on.
I want to keep building on the opportunities that we've had for, you know, people approaching us saying, I've got space, I've got this, mm-hmm. I've got that. You know, those are our lifeblood right now.
Oh, for sure, yeah.
And so when people are able to open their doors to us, make it possible, that makes it possible for us to do that work. I'm the grant writer for Freedom's Path Recovery Society.
So you do a lot of writing.
Yeah, I'm behind the computer for many hours a day.
Exciting, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. And, well, it actually is because my first love was writing.
Nice.
So to be doing writing as part of my job now is awesome.
Yeah. Oh, that's right? Wonderful.
Yeah.
Well, at least you enjoy it, because I know it was painful when I was doing it. So.
Yeah. No, it's pretty cool for me.
Yeah. Yeah. Right on.
Yeah. And so I'm going to keep working at that and keep building it out. White Bison Society has expressed an interest in a Canadian Wobriety Conference.
Oh, nice. Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah. So this was going back to this summer.
Mm-hmm.
I guess I should go back a little further than that. One of the things Don Coyes created as part of the White Bison Society is the Hoop of 100 Eagle Feathers.
Yes.
So I'm not going to try and retell his teachings behind the Hoop of 100 Eagle Feathers, because he does it much better than I do. but it was... traveling through North America and came through the Otis Nation in Central Alberta. And so David and I got the opportunity to go to the Otis Nation and be part of that ceremony. And it was so profound. I had waterworks. It was just like, it was so beautiful. And there were so many people there. We weren't able to stay, but they actually had the horse dance there.
Mm.
They had sweat lodges. They had four learning teepees where they had different elders and knowledge keepers teaching about different things, and it was incredible. And so after that event, they realized, you know, there is quite a following for Wobriety in Canada, and we should probably have a conference.
Nice.
So right now the elders in Central Alberta are discussing, you know, can we make that happen here?
Right on.
Right. And so they're exploring those topics. So I mean, we're keeping an ear to what could happen.
Absolutely.
Right. I'm a big fan of Calgary, so I'm like, hey, we can make it happen here.
Absolutely.
But we'll see what the elders decide will be.
Yeah, great, obviously. You know? But
and then what else is happening?
Is there I know there's been a lot of interest to try and get more facilitators trained.
Mm-hmm.
Has there been anybody approach you to either partner with it or to, I guess, work with you, Freedom's Path, to bring the facilitator training to Calgary rather than Central Alberta?
That would be amazing.
Yeah.
And it is on my radar, and I keep a list of the people who are interested in the training,
okay,
who have written to us. I wasn't successful with the grants to try and bring the training to Calgary, but I'm still trying. Right. So it's still something I'm working on.
Right on.
Because Central Alberta is not easy for everybody to travel to. You know, and the more facilitators, the more healing, the better it is for everybody.
Absolutely, right? Well, and they have trainers in Alberta.
Yeah.
So it's not like you're getting somebody from, you know, Texas to come up here to train. Like, there are trainers here, so that's kinda cool.
Yeah, it really is awesome. Yeah. And they're fantastic trainers.
Yeah.
And I actually got my last tattoo at our last training program.
Yeah, yeah.
Because what was her name? Tracy?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
Well, she had a tattoo that just inspired me. It was the first time I had seen a cultural tattoo that I was like, I need something like that.
Right on. Right?
So definitely on my radar.
Yep.
If people have like ideas behind that, I'm open to suggestions.
Yeah, right? Obviously. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I guess one of the last things I guess to just kind of mention is, I think these programs, they're obviously available everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's really just a matter of people needing to find people that will put in the effort to get the programs up and running in their area.
Mm-hmm.
But maybe, like, how vital do you see these programs to people's healing and people's and helping communities heal and things like that?
Yeah.
Like, is it? Because I think to me, it seems pretty vital.
Yeah, and I'm going to get a little deep on you here for a minute.
Okay.
I'm biased
about
Indigenous culture. I do feel that because we are on Indigenous land, this is our home on Native land, right? I feel that it benefits everyone living here to learn about these teachings.
Yes.
And to connect with the culture, to connect with the elders' knowledge, and understand why, for thousands of years, the indigenous culture thrived here prior to colonization.
Yeah, yeah.
One of the things that they talk about in the medicine wheel and the 12 steps is there are four great races, right?
Yeah.
That are in taught through the medicine wheel, and this program can benefit any person.
Yeah.
Right. So this is, yes, it's indigenous led for indigenous people, but I honestly believe anyone from any culture that is living here in Canada benefits from learning it.
That's a good point.
And not only for recovery from addictions or trauma,
yeah,
but in recovery from colonization.
For sure.
You know, and how we're going to move forward as a people living on these lands,
yeah,
moving forward. So there's a big part of me that feels that it's very important for Indigenous people to have their own spaces, but it is important for non-Indigenous people to learn these teachings as well.
Well, and I think that's a really valid point, and I think you know, I think it's important for non-Indigenous to go into those spaces and realize that those are Indigenous spaces and they are welcome there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, I've never seen people kicked out of an Indigenous event for not being Indigenous.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just, it's breaking down those barriers, I think, because a lot of people, like, there's just too many barriers. There's too much division.
Yeah.
And it's really, I don't think it's the fault of anybody in particular. Mm-hmm. I think it's the fault of government policies and all the politics and the colonialism that goes with that,
yeah,
that we've all been forced into.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, because I was thinking about this the other day, like, you know, the reality is Britain's done this all over the planet.
Totally.
So just because people are in Canada now and they're non-Indigenous,
mm-hmm,
doesn't mean they haven't felt the effects of colonization on their family,
mm-hmm,
and haven't had these traumas inflicted on them. And it would help them. It would benefit them, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, it's not always comfortable.
Yeah.
Right? Particularly, like, if you listen to any of David's podcasts where he's talking about Indigenous issues or talking with someone,
yeah,
who's Indigenous, he's very humble to the fact that he is a white man,
yeah, yeah,
in Indigenous spaces, right?
For sure.
And he doesn't actually even use his facilitation certification because it's not his place. He,
yeah,
does not feel comfortable doing that.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? And but having the education of learning what it looks like has been really profound on him.
Yeah.
And one of the things he mentions quite regularly is when we were attending, and this is his story, and I'm paraphrasing his story.
For sure.
But when we were attending the training program, someone looked at him and said, you know, it's not your fault, but we have to be able to talk about these things.
Yeah.
Right? Colonization, genocide, it's not your fault.
Yeah.
But Indigenous voices need to talk about it.
Exactly.
Right? Yeah. And that is painful for, yeah, people who are on the colonizer side of things.
For sure.
Right? And being of mixed heritage myself, I look at both of them.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Because my non-Indigenous side of my family was a part of that.
Absolutely.
Right? And so I, yeah, have to acknowledge that my family lineage is also part of that painful history.
Yeah.
You know, and how am I going to work towards decolonizing and breaking down those structures? So I don't know if that's answering your question about how Wobriety can help other people, but
I think that's important because it just goes to the point that everybody can get something out of it.
Absolutely.
because, you know, going into it, David didn't know much about what happened to Indigenous, like most people in Canada.
Yeah.
There's no, not really any education about it.
Mm-hmm.
So when you find out that what happened in residential school, it's horrifying.
It is.
I mean, I remember being a kid and I was raised like in a non-Indigenous family an Indigenous family with non-Indigenous ties to culture, but
assimilated.
So yeah, it's exactly it. So then when I started learning about residential school, I think I was like 12 or 13 years old.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it was horrifying.
Mm-hmm.
And you just sit there thinking, how does a human being do these things to other human beings?
Yeah.
You know, and but it's so it is hard. And I like, you know, my wife always says, you know, we need to have the truth before we can have the reconciliation.
Absolutely.
And I think that's an important step that in a lot of cases gets missed. Mm-hmm. And I feel like these programs and just the space that's created allows people at least some sort of comfort level to come in and speak their truth,
mm-hmm.
and just say what's going on.
Yeah.
Rather than have to filter it to make it appealing or less difficult for other people to hear.
Mm-hmm.
It will be challenging, I think, for non-Indigenous who maybe don't know the full extent of what the trauma is that has been put upon.
Yeah. I have said to a couple people who are non-Indigenous who are interested in the program, do a blanket exercise first.
Yeah.
You know, the blanket exercise will not only teach you the history, but you will be interactive with that history, and helping you to understand where people are coming from in that trauma.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I think jumping in with both feet into these programs would be difficult.
Yeah.
And, but at the same time, too, you know, these like you know, the programs are meant for Indigenous people, and I think it's what I like too is that it's not exclusionary of anybody.
Mm-hmm.
So in Canada's case, it's Inuit, Métis, and First Nations. Well, that's all non-status, status, doesn't matter.
Mm-hmm.
It's just come in and work on your shit, really, is what it boils down to. Like, and I from what I can see already in the programs, it starts to build community,
mm-hmm.
even within the programs.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's such an important thing that's been destroyed.
Absolutely.
Forcibly.
Yeah. And particularly, I've seen it happen for people who are, you know, 60-scoop, millennium-scoop survivors.
Yeah.
Right? Because they don't have those family roots connecting them to the community.
Yeah.
They were raised in non-Indigenous families. You know, you can't just walk, well, you can just walk up to somebody on the street and say, hey, you're Indigenous too, but it's going to be awkward.
Yeah.
You know, but in those situations, to say, hey, we all have a common shared thing, let's connect. I've seen friendships growing out of it.
Absolutely.
And it's been really cool to watch.
One of the things that Michelle, my wife, and I talk about is not having to explain the trauma.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, I think, and even with people that weren't raised with Indigenous culture, you know, through 60 Scoop or whatever other forced removal,
mm-hmm.
For them to be able to walk into that space, what's nice is they can walk in and they don't have to explain why that hurts them or how that's affect, like, they will and they can, but everybody in the room tends to know and understand that already.
Yeah.
And so I think that you're it's just kind of a different atmosphere, a different level of understanding. So you can just walk in and you're already starting off ahead of the game,
mm-hmm.
as far as trauma and things like that.
Yeah. And that is something I have to explain when I'm writing those grants. Right. Mm-hmm. And so I kind of feel like I should mention this. When the culture, the land, the community was removed from Indigenous people during colonization, this left a void that was very easy to fill with substances, with behaviors that were unhealthy, with bad foods.
Yeah.
We were, and those were forced upon us and made very easy. So for my family, the loss of culture was immediately followed by alcoholism.
Yeah.
Because what do you replace the loss of your identity, the loss of your family? The way that you were brought up has been completely obliterated. What else are you going to replace it with?
Absolutely.
Right? And so a lot of people don't get that.
Yeah. They're
like, oh, just get over it.
Yeah.
Right? And it's like,
famous was very easy.
You know, it's tricky to help somebody understand why it's so hard to get over it, and I'm using finger air quotes, when you're talking about like multiple generations of lost identity, culture, and land connections.
Absolutely. Right?
Like it's also something that's tricky for people to understand who are in programs like AA,
mm-hmm.
and are non-Indigenous, because they're like, well, just get God, get sober, and get on with it.
Yeah.
Right. And it's like, well, no, actually, that program doesn't work for everybody.
Yeah.
Because da, 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 and you have to go through explaining it all to them. So not having to explain those things and being in a space where people get it.
Yeah.
Right. And and is absolutely incredible. I'm so grateful for those
opportunities. Yeah, no, and well, and that's, for me, that's kind of why I wanted to have you on here, was because it was like going through the past year and going through the facilitator training and now actually facilitating one of the programs. Like it's changed me completely. Mm-hmm. I feel like,
really,
not completely. Like I'm, you know, still have some bad habits, but but it's just completely changed how I look at people in general. So even like, you know, you do stupid things like ride the C train in the morning, and you're, you know, every once in a while I look around, and it just changes the way I look at people, because I immediately go to like, well, what's the backstory to that person's life?
Yeah.
Or that person's life, because when you're in a, you know, when you're in a crowd of people, you can see people who are visibly unhappy, and they're not just unhappy because, you know, they got to go to work today. Like you can see it's a deeper thing, and so I think, you know, it's just a better understanding that, you know, we kind of all have trauma in some way.
Yep.
But so you know, I don't know where I was going with that, but I just feel like that's kind of why I wanted to have you on here, was just to talk about these programs, because I didn't think they would, but they've changed me. You know, they changed the direction of my life that I want to go in. And so I think it's like vital, I think, for people to try to heal, to get beyond this stuff.
Mm-hmm. That's so profound. I shouldn't, but
it's okay, you can.
If you let Don Coyes know,
yeah,
that's impacted you like that, I'm sure that would be awesome for them to hear.
Yeah, maybe I should send an email.
Yeah, because I mean, that's that in and of itself is transformative, because now every person that you interact with who is maybe grouchy because of, you know, things that are happening at home that aren't happy, instead of you just thinking, oh, they're just a grouch, now you're like, oh, maybe this person is actually living with some trauma that I don't understand, and have a bit more compassion, and that makes the whole world a better place.
Well, that's just it. And then the reality is there's so few opportunities for people to heal or to do a program like these programs, because they're not freely available everywhere. You can't go to your doctor and be like, hey, I want to take the Mending Broken Hearts, and have them go, great, here's a list of the 12 places you can go in Calgary. Like, and even beyond non-Indigenous, there's just not those resources. There's not that healing ability.
Yeah, and that's a lot of why Freedom's Path Recovery Society was created, is because of those lack of space, lack of availability, the requirement for referrals to get into these programs, the costs associated with these programs.
Yeah.
I mean, we have made recovery as difficult to access as possible.
Oh, yeah.
In our society. And so Freedom's Path Recovery Society was looking at how can we overcome those barriers? How can we break them down?
Yeah.
And so, yeah, maybe one day you can just walk in and be like, there's 12 places you can get this.
Well, then, yeah.
That would be awesome.
And I guess we should mention too that like if you go to the White Bison face or website, they have the meetings listed, and our Calgary meetings are there. I went there the other day and checked it out, and they're there.
Yeah, and they even have a Thursday evening meeting online.
Oh, okay, that
so,
I didn't know.
Yeah, it just popped into my head that if you are somewhere where there is no meetings whatsoever, you can go online, and they have group meetings on there.
Nice.
Yeah.
And then you can also find out about a lot of their other training and stuff that they're doing, and where it is and what's going on there as well. So I just, I guess just to kind of close it out, just to plug White Bison a little bit. So if anybody wants to check that out, you can sign up for like daily meditations, which is all elders, voices that have come up with these daily meditations and things like that. So it's a real good place to get inspiration and, I guess to start your day off the right way or whatever, whatever it is that it affects you.
Yeah. Whitebison.org.
That's right.
Yeah.
And if anybody in Calgary wants to find out about it, they can just contact Freedom's Path Recovery Society.
Yeah. And so info@freedomspathrecoverysociety.
Okay.
I have a Gmail that's whitebisoncalgary@gmail.
Okay.
Calgary White Bison.
Oops. Yeah.
Cut that out. I don't remember which one it is. And, yeah.
But, yeah, you guys have a website, Facebook, all that kind of stuff. So
absolutely.
It's, so I really appreciate you coming on. Is there anything, I guess, the one last thing you want to say to anybody about these programs or about, that we haven't already covered?
Recovery is a community endeavor.
Mm.
Right? So if you're sitting here and you've made it through this whole podcast and you're like, wow, that's really interesting, but I don't think it would apply to me. You know, as a charity, we're accepting donations.
Yeah.
Send the information to someone that you think might be interested. Invite them to the events. Even letting someone know that you support them as they're going through their most difficult, dark points in their life is going to help everyone.
Yeah.
Right? So that would be the only thing I would close out saying.
And that's a beautiful thing to close out on. Yeah, so thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you, Darcy. Yeah. Nancy.